17. It was a hot day in August. It was so hot, if you stood still too long in the vacant lot, the sun bouncing off a chunk of broken glass or metal could fry a patch on your hide. So hot, if you were packing candy, you had soup in your pocket by 2 o'clock. So hot, the dogs were tripping on their own tongues. And so hot, the fire hydrant at Green and Chestnut was gushing like Niagara Falls, courtesy of somebody wrenching off the cap. By the time Maniac and the rest of the vacant lot regulars got there, Chestnut and Green was a cross between a block party and a swimming pool. Radios blaring, people blaring, somebody selling lemonade, somebody selling Kool-Aid, ice cubes on toothpicks. Bodies, skin, colors, water, gleaming. Buttery warm, cool, wet, screaming, happy. The younger you were, the fewer clothes you had on. Grown-ups sat on the sidewalk and dangled their bare feet in the running gutters. Teenagers stripped down to bathing suits and cutoffs. Little kids underwear, littlest kids nothing. Maniac danced and pranced and screamed with the rest. He learned how to jump in front of the gusher and let it propel him halfway across the street. He joined in a snake dance. He got goofy. He drenched himself in all the wet and warm and happy. When he first heard the voice, he didn't think much of it. Just one voice in hundreds. But then the other voices were falling away in bunches until only this one was left. It was a strange voice, deep and thick and sort of clotted, as though it had to fight its way through a can of worms before coming out. The voice was behind him, saying the same word over and over, calling a name. And even then, Maniac turned only because he was curious, wondering what everybody was staring at. But when he saw the brown finger pointed at him, not a speck of icing on it, and the brown arm that aimed it, and the brown face behind it, he knew the name coming out of the can of worms' mouth was his. Whitey. And it surprised him that he knew. He just stood there, blinking through the water drop sun blur, the hydrant gusher smacking his thin, bare ankles. The radios, the people, were silent. "You move on now, Whitey," the man said. "You pick up your gear and move on out. Time to go home now." The man was close enough to be catching some water around his shoes, which Maniac noticed were actually slippers. His pants were baggy, and his shirt really a shirt but a pajama top covered with high-tailed roosters. White hair curled around his ears. Maniac gave his answer. "I am home." The man took a step closer, dropped his arm. "You go on home now, son. Back to your own kind. I seen you at the block party. Now you get going." Maniac stepped out of the gusher. The water roared on to the opposite curb. "This is where I live. I live right down there." He pointed toward Sycamore. The man didn't seem to notice. "Never enough, is it, Whitey? Just want more and more. Won't even leave us our little water in the street. Come on down to see Bojangles. Come on to the zoo, the monkey house." He must be hard of hearing, Maniac thought. So he called it out really loud and slow and pointed again. "I live at 728 Sycamore. I do." The old man stepped closer. "You got your own kind. It's how you wanted it. Let's keep it that way. Now move on. Your kind's waiting." He flung his finger westward. "Up there." Suddenly, Hester and Lester were by Maniac's side, barking at the man. "You leave him alone, old rag picker. You shut up." And the man was croaking, ranting, not to Maniac, now but to the people. What happens when we go over there? Black is black. White is white. The sheep lie not with the lion. The sheep knows his own kind. A woman was rushing in then, pulling him away up the street. Our own kind! Our own kind! The water thundered across the silent street. Maniac, who was one of the world's great sleepers, didn't sleep well that night or the next. He started getting up earlier than usual, not to sneak some time with the A-book, just to run. Bowwow wasn't even ready for his morning pee yet, but he went along. Usually Maniac just jogged around the East End. Now he did the whole town, plus over the river to Bridgeport. By the third day, Bowwow refused to go along. One morning, as Maniac was heading home, Hester and Lester came running up Sycamore. Maniac, come on! We're gonna run too! Let's go that way! They tried to turn him around, but he told them to just hold on a minute. He wanted to stop home for a quick drink. Then he'd go running with them. They kept yelling and tugging and pushing and grabbing his legs. And then Amanda was pedaling frantically up to him, slapping on a quick smile and gasping, "Hey, I'm going to the store. Want to come along?" Maniac checked the sun. It was hardly up to the second stories. "Stores aren't open yet," he said. Amanda just gawked. She was a rotten liar, Maniac knew. He shook loose from the little ones and trotted on. He didn't know what, but something was wrong. The little ones jabbered and screeched and grabbed. He ran faster and faster. Mrs. Beale was out front with the yellow bucket, soap suds spilling over the brim, a stiff bristle brush in her hand. She was scrubbing the house, the brick wall, scrubbing furiously at the chalk, grunting with the effort, her cheeks wet. He had been away too early, way too fast. Only the F had been scrubbed away. The rest was quite easy to read. The tall, yellow letters, the same color as the scrub bucket. Ishbelly, go home. Chapter 18. Amanda tried to reason with him. You can't listen to that old coot. He's goofy. He's always saying stuff like that. You can't go because of something one nutty old coot says. Maniac pointed out that it wasn't the nutty old coot who chalked up the front of the house. Amanda laughed. That? That's no big deal. It wasn't even paint. If they really meant it, they would have done it in paint. And anyway, don't you know they did my mother a favor? It gave her a chance to get out the old bucket and do some serious scrubbing. Ever since the kids stopped cranning the house, she hasn't known what to do with herself. Now she's happy again. Maniac didn't answer. Amanda didn't understand that most of the hurt he felt was not for himself, but for her and the rest of the family. She stomped her foot. You gotta stay! I don't gotta do anything. You go, you'll starve. Was I starving before I came here? You'll freeze to death in the winter. Your fingers will get so stiff, they'll break off like icicles. I'll go somewhere. Somewhere? Like the deer pen? I'll be okay. Or maybe Prairie Dog Town, huh? How about that? She jabbed him. You could live in a gopher hole. You'd be starving, so that would be perfect, because then you'd be so skinny you could fit right down there, all snugly in their little tunnels. He shrugged. Sounds cozy. This was driving Amanda bonkers. He was acting so different, all glum and wiseache. Answers, as if he didn't care, not about anything. Yeah, she sniffed. Well, what you gonna do for a pillow, huh? I know you put my pillow on the floor. I'll use a hibernating gopher. Funny. And bathroom, huh? Where will you go to the bathroom? The bushes? McDonald's? Lots of places. She hated it, an answer for everything. And the scariest part was He was probably right. If anybody could survive on the loose, it would be this kid who showed up from Hollidaysburg, who slept on floors, who outran dogs. He was making her so mad. She pointed at him. She sneered. Well, I'll tell you one thing, buddy boy. You better shut the door on your way out and lock it, because if I get my room back, I'm not giving it up again. So don't ever come crawling back around here. She kicked him in the sneaker. You hear? Don't worry, he said flatly. And don't think you're taking any of my books with you this time either. And you can forget about ever getting a chance to open my Encyclopedia A, which I was almost ready to let you do before you went and started acting all poopy. He said, I'll join the library. She jumped up. Ha! You can't. No. No, you need a library card. I'll get one. Ha ha! You can't get a library card without an address. She regretted it as soon as she said it. His head swung. His eyes met hers. Her eyes said, why did you say that? Her eyes couldn't answer. He got up and went out and trotted up the street. Amanda cried. She tore a magazine in half. She punched the sofa. She kicked the easy chair. She kicked Bow Wow. Bow Wow went yelping into the kitchen. See? She yelled at the front door. See what you made me do, Jeffrey McGee? Jeffrey, maniac, crazy man, Bozo McGee! He wasn't back by lunch. He wasn't back by dinner. I'm going looking, Amanda told her worried parents. No one tried to stop her. She rode her bike all over, East End, West End. She even went over to Bridgeport, practically got herself killed on the bridge. She never pedaled so much in her life. She didn't come home till after dark. When her parents headed upstairs to bed, she asked if she could stay up to watch TV. They looked at each other and said okay. She was nodding off in the middle of some late movie when the door opened and he walked in. What you doing up so late? He said. I'm incubating an egg, she snarled. He shrugged and went upstairs. She closed her eyes and smiled. Next morning, a little kid from three blocks away came knocking at the front door. His yo-yo string had a knot, fat as a mushroom. As Amanda watched Maniac tackle the knot, an idea slithered into her brain. When the little kid left with the string good as new, she said, Jeffrey, if I knew some way that would make it okay for you to stay, would you? What do you mean, okay? He said. I mean, that even if there's one or two people who aren't too wild about you now, and that's all there really are, that even they would like you, and everybody else who already likes you, they'll like you even more. Purely out of curiosity, Maniac replied, how's all that supposed to happen? Amanda told him about Cobble's knot. Chapter 19. If the wonders of the world hadn't stopped at 7, Cobble's knot would have been number 8. Nobody knew how it got there. As the story goes, the original Mr. Cobble wasn't doing too well with the original Cobble's Corner grocery at the corner of Hector and Birch. In his first 2 weeks, all he sold was some Quaker oats and penny candy. Then one morning, as he unlocked the front door for business, he saw the knot. It was dangling from the flagpole that hung over the big picture window, the one that said Frosted Foods in icy blue and white letters. He got out a pair of scissors and was about to snip it off when he noticed what an unusual and incredible knot it was. And then he got an idea. He could offer a prize to anyone who untangled the knot, publicize it, call the newspaper, winner's picture on the front page, Cobble's Corner in the background. Business would boom. Well, he went ahead and did it. And if business didn't exactly boom, it must have at least peeped a little. Because eons later, when Maniac McGee came to town, Cobble's Corner was still there. Only now it sold pizza instead of groceries. And the prize was different. It had started out being 60 seconds alone with the candy counter. Now it was one large pizza per week for a whole year, which, in time, made the knot practically priceless, which is why, after leaving it outside for a year, Mr. Cobble took it down and kept it in a secret place inside the store and brought it out only to meet a challenger. If you look at old pictures in the Two Mills Times, you see that the knot was about the size and shape of a lopsided volleyball. It was made out of string, but it had more contortions, ins and outs, twists and turns, and dips and doodles than the brain of Albert Einstein himself. It had deflated all comers for years, including J.J. Thorndike, who grew up to be a magician, and Fingers Holloway, who grew up to be a pickpocket. Hardly a week went by without somebody taking a shot at the knot and losing, and each loser added to the glory that awaited someone who could untie it. "So you see," said Amanda, "if you go up there and untie Cobble's knot, which I know you can, you'll get your picture in the paper, and you'll be the biggest hero ever around here, and nobody'll mess with you then." Maniac listened and thought about it and finally gave a little grin. "Maybe you're just after the pizza, since you know I can't eat it." Amanda screeched, "Jeffrey! The pizza's not the point!" She started to hit him. He laughed and grabbed her wrist and said, okay, he'd give it a try. They brought out the knot and hung it from the flagpole. They brought out the official square wooden table for the challenger to stand on, and from the moment Maniac climbed up, you could tell the knot was in big trouble. To the ordinary person, Cobble's knot was about as friendly as the nest of yellow jackets. Besides the tangle itself, there was weathering of that first year when the knot hung outside and became hard as a rock. You could barely make out the individual strands. It was grimy, moldy, crusted over. Here and there, a loop stuck out, maybe big enough to stick your pinky finger through. Pitiful testimony to the challengers who had tried and failed. And there stood Maniac, turning the knot, checking it out. Some say there was a faint grin on his face, kind of playful, as though the knot wasn't his enemy at all, but an old pal just playing a trick on him. Others say his mouth was more grim than grin, that his eyes lit up like flashbulbs because he knew he was finally facing a knot that would stand up and fight, a worthy opponent. He lifted it in his hands to feel the weight of it. He touched it here and touched it there, gently, daintily. He scraped a patch of crust off with his fingernail. He laid his fingertips on it as though feeling for a pulse. Only a few people were watching at first, and half of them were Hex Angels, a roving tricycle gang of 4 and 5-year-olds. Most of them had had sneaker lace or yo-yo knots untied by Maniac, and they expected this would take only a couple of seconds longer. When the seconds became minutes, they started to get antsy, and before 10 minutes had passed, they were zooming off in search of somebody to terrorize. The rest of the spectators watched Maniac poke and tug and pick at the knot. Never a big pull or yank, just his fingertips touching and grazing and pecking away like some little bird. "What's he doing?" somebody said. "What's taking so long? He gonna do it or not?" After an hour, except for a few more finger-sized loops, all Maniac had to show for his trouble were the flakes of knot crust that covered the table. "He ain't even found the end of the string yet," somebody grumbled, and almost everybody but Amanda took off. Maniac never noticed. He just went on working. By lunchtime, they were all back, and more kept coming. Not only kids, but grown-ups too, black and white, because Cobble's Corner was on Hector and word was racing through the neighborhoods on both the east and west sides of the street. What people saw, they didn't believe. The knot had grown, swelled, exploded. It was a frizzy globe. The newspaper the next day described it as a gigantic hairball. Now, Except for a packed-in clump at the center, it was practically all loops. You could look through it and see Maniac calmly working on the other side. "He found the end!" somebody gasped, and the corner burst into applause. Meanwhile, inside, Cobbles was selling pizza left and right, not to mention Zepps, a 2 mils type of hoagie, steak sandwiches, strombolis, and gallons of soda. Mr. Cobble himself came out to offer Maniac some pizza, which Maniac, of course, politely turned down. He did accept an orange soda, though, and then a little kid, whose sneaker laces Maniac had untied many a time, handed up to him a 3-pack of Tasty Cake Butterscotch Crimpets. After polishing off the crimpets, Maniac did the last thing anybody expected. He lay down and took a nap right there on the table, the knot hanging above him like a small, hairy planet, the mob buzzing all around him. Maniac knew what the rest of them didn't. The hardest part was yet to come. He had to find the right routes to untangle the mess, or it would just close up again like a rock and probably stay that way forever. He would need the touch of a surgeon, the alertness of an owl, the cunning of 3 foxes, and the foresight of a grand master in chess. To accomplish that, he needed to clear his head, to flush away all distraction, especially the memory of the butterscotch crimpets, which had already hooked him. In exactly 15 minutes, he woke up and started back in. Like some fairy tale tailor, he threaded the end through the maze, dipping and doodling through openings the way he squiggled a football through a defense. As the long August afternoon boiled along, the exploded knot hairball would cave in here, cave in there. It got lumpy, out of shape, saggy. The Times photographer made starburst with his camera. The people munched on Cobble's pizza, sipped across Hector from sideway to sidewalk, and said, "Ooh," and "Ah." And then, around dinner time, a huge roar went up, a volcano of cheers. Cobble's knot was dead, undead, gone. It was nothing but string. Chapter 21. Bugles, cap, guns, sirens, firecrackers, war whoops. Cobble's corner was a madhouse. Traffic had to beep and inch through the mob. Kids cried for autographs. Scraps of paper fluttered down in a shower of homemade confetti. A beaming Mr. Cobble handed up a certificate to Maniac for the year's worth of large pizzas. Maniac accepted it and said his thanks. The undone knot lay in a coiled heap at Maniac's feet. Mr. Cobble grabbed it. Already people were guessing how long it was. The yelling went on and on, the way yelling does, if only to hear himself. But one person wasn't yelling, Amanda Beale. She was holding one of the homemade confetti scraps, gaping at it. Then she was scrambling across the sidewalk, the street, shoving people's legs aside, grabbing some more scraps, crying out, "Oh no! Oh no!" And then she was running. Maniac saw. He leaped from the table. He picked up a scrap. There was printing on it about Africa. He picked up another. This one mentioned ants. Another, Aristotle. The Encyclopedia A! He followed the scrap paper trail up Hector and down Sycamore, all the way to the Beals' front steps. The only thing left of the book was the blue and red cover. It looked something like an empty loose-leaf binder. Amanda was hunched over, rocking, squeezing it to her chest. "It was my fault," she sobbed. "I got careless. I left it in the living room. Anybody could look through the window and. She clenched her eyes so tightly it was a wonder the tears got out. More than anything, Maniac wanted to hug Amanda and tell her it was okay. He wanted to go inside, be with his family, in his house, his room, behind his window. But that wasn't the right thing. The right thing was to make sure the Beals didn't get hurt anymore. He couldn't keep letting them pay such a price for him. He turned and headed back up Sycamore. Maybe the man with the can of worms voice was right. Back to your own kind. Back to your own kind. He never got farther west than the far curb of Hector Street, because McNabb and the Cobras were there to meet him, grinning, leering, hissing. Yo, baby, we hear you got a little pizza prize there. Come on back. We missed ya. We been waiting for ya. So he turned and started walking north on Hector, right down the middle of the street, right down the invisible chalk line that divided East End from West End. Cars beeped at him. Drivers hollered, but he never flinched. The Cobras kept right along with him on their side of the street. So did a bunch of East Enders on their side. One of them was Marsbar. Both sides were calling for him to come over. And then they were calling at each other, then yelling, then cursing. But nobody stepped off a curb. Nobody kept moving north, an ugly, snarling, black and white escort for the kid in the middle. And that's how it went. Between the curbs, smack dab down the center, Maniac McGee walked, not ran, right out of town.